Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Even if I try to fight it, I would probably still get bit for trying to pursue it. It makes me feel hopeless, basically, that they could just get away with stuff. I feel completely powerless because it doesn't matter. Like, it's up to them.
That was Antonio Rivera, one of the young men that WNYC spoke to as part of an investigation into whether the high rate of marijuana arrests in New York City could be connected to the city's stop-and-frisk policy and to alleged illegal searches by police. Rivera is not alone in deciding not to challenge the search. Stop-and-frisk is a policy aimed at finding weapons when police have a reasonable suspicion that an individual has one. But as WNYC's Elsa Chang has been reporting, low-level marijuana offenses, such as having it in public view or smoking it, are the most common types of misdemeanors to result from these searches. And although public defenders and others say illegal searches are common, few complaints are made. This rarely winds up in court. Joining me now with part two of her series on alleged illegal searches and the major challenges to fighting improper arrest is WNYC's Elsa Chang. The second part of her investigative report aired originally on Morning Edition and The Takeaway Today. Hi, Elsa.
Hi there.
And so, listeners, we asked for your calls yesterday if you think an illegal search has happened to you, or if you're a lawyer, if you think it has happened to your client, or if you're a police officer, your reaction to this. And we got some great calls. Now we have a follow-up, very specific question. 212-433-WNYC. We want to hear about why, if you think this happened to you or your client, you didn't challenge it in court. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If this sounds like an experience you had, why did you not try to blow the whistle on the cop if the search was illegal? 212-433-9692. Elsa, remind us, what's the difference between a legal and an illegal search that could produce marijuana during a stop and frisk?
Okay. During a stop and frisk, again, just to go over sort of the three levels you need. To stop someone on the street, you need reasonable suspicion that person is committing a crime or has committed a crime. And then to pat down that person on the outside of his clothes, you need reasonable suspicion that he's carrying a weapon. Now, you can only search that person, that is, actually go into a pocket if you think you feel a weapon there during the pat down. But you can only go into that one pocket. You don't then get license to go into every pocket, shoes, socks, underwear, etc.
And so what you reported yesterday is that so many people who've been arrested for these low-level marijuana misdemeanors and lawyers of those people say that there was a pattern of illegal searches, of illegally then going to other pockets and socks and shoes and whatever. The things that produce the marijuana, which would not have that same hard feel as a gun.
Exactly. These are soft Ziploc bags.
That you came to suspect a pattern of illegal searches. And you spoke with a former police officer, Harold Crawford, who echoed some of this. Listen.
When you're these younger brothers and sisters walking the streets, when you got four officers surrounding you, telling you, go in your pockets and do this, do that, we recommend that's not the time to challenge an officer. For the moment, comply, because all you're going to do by not complying is escalate.
So that goes to the question of why somebody at the moment doesn't say, officer, you're not allowed to search me there because you didn't feel anything hard. You're not allowed to search me in that way. Not that you expect the average 16-year-old to know that anyway.
Right. But, you know, many of the young men that I spoke to, they know their constitutional rights. But they were telling me, look, when officers are touching you, sometimes in, you know, semi-private places near the groin area, it is not the time to give a speech about your constitutional rights. There's just this very strong power dynamic that happens, according to them, between you and two, three officers who are armed and touching you.
Talk back, you may find yourself tased or worse.
Could be.
Seydou in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello, good morning, sir.
Have you had an experience like this?
Yes. Last 2 weeks, I get sheriffs in front of my building. I was coming from my job. Actually, I'm a cab driver in New York City. So I was very surprised to see two policemen. When I was opening just in front of my building, coming in and asking me some questions and looking in my bag, looking in my pocket, asking me why I was saying hi to a friend in the other corner. So I went up and I told my wife. That was my first time, you know, someone doing that to me. So I was very surprised to see something that, like that happen.
That kind of search. And did they?
Yes.
Did you wind up getting arrested? Did they find something?
No, they didn't find nothing on me because I was coming from my job. I was surprised because I had groceries in my other hand. So it shows that I was going into my building, not so doing something illegal in the street.
Right. Thank you very much. Anthony in Queens, you had an experience like this?
Yeah, me and my friends were driving to a party in the Bronx. And we had six people in the car for five, so that was already kind of a problem. And then we got pulled over by a riot van with three cops in it. And instead of knocking on the front seat, like driver's side, they just opened the back door of the car and pulled me and my friends out. And, yeah.
Started searching you?
Yeah, they searched us and they searched the car. And they told us if we moved, they would break our jaws and stuff.
And they found marijuana?
No, they actually only found a pipe.
Oh.
And then it was my pipe, so...
Arrested you for possession of paraphernalia?
Yeah.
Wow. Anthony, thank you very much. Elsa, what about the legality of that? It's a different situation than the stop and frisk of a pedestrian.
Right.
Do you happen to know?
Exactly. I think, first of all, we need a criminal lawyer who can talk about the exact law detailing vehicle stops. But you still need reasonable suspicion when you're stopping a car that a crime is being committed. It sounds like if, you know, if there were six people for a five-person car, I don't know the exact laws here in New York State about having six passengers to a five-person car.
And searching every passenger.
And searching every passenger, as well as the trunk. I'd like to hear from a defense lawyer who can look at that vehicle stop and tell me what the nuances in the search law are.
And of course, we don't know the veracity of the caller's story. We don't know him. But I didn't know that the paraphernalia itself would be illegal anyway.
Right.
Otherwise, they'd have to close down half the stores they pass
in the village,
walking to the subway from this building. Edward in Queens, something like this happened to you?
Yes, it did. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
I'm an older individual now, but several years ago, you know, you get what people call, what I call being stopped because you're black. And a specific incident happened in South Jamaica, Queens, on Jamaica Avenue. Basically, what happened was I was stopped. I was frisked. I didn't have anything on me. But I didn't believe that the police officer had a reasonable suspicion. But they used this classic, oh, you fit the description. And I tried to pursue it. And basically, you have to take time off from work, which at that time I didn't have and I couldn't afford to. And the Civilian Complaint Review Board, even if you can get the officer's badge number, because if you asked them for it at the time, it's not a wise idea because these police officers, not to make a blanket statement, but some have, with my personal experience, they tend to be very belligerent within their duties, care, that CPR thing, I've never encountered it.
Courtesy, professionalism, respect.
I've never encountered it.
Ray Kelly's motto. Edward, thank you very much. Now, Elsa?
Just to address what the listener just said about fits the description, if you look on a form that police have to fill out when they make a stop and frisk, it's called the UF-250. There are a set of boxes that an officer is supposed to check designating the reason for the stop. And one of the reasons, one of the boxes they can check is fits the description. Now, there's a class action going on actually right now led by the Center for the Constitution for Constitutional Rights. And one of the arguments they make is a lot of the designated reasons for stopping someone are constitutionally insufficient to actually be reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. You know, furtive movements, that's another box. And that these are constitutionally, you know, perhaps constitutionally impermissible reasons to stop people.
And you did report, he mentioned the Civilian Complaint Review Board. which monitors the activities of police when there are civilian complaints. And you looked at how many there have been and how many might relate to illegal searches that produce marijuana arrests?
It's actually, they had the number, they gave me a number for number of complaints regarding illegal searches during stop and frisk. So these could include much more than just marijuana cases. But more than 1,100 people complained to the CCRB about these illegal searches during stop and frisks. And in those cases, only 3% of officers involved were actually disciplined by the department. And the most common punishment those officers got was instructions on how to perform a proper search. The most egregious punishment officers got, this was doled out to 8 officers, was docked vacation days. To defense lawyers, these penalties do nothing to deter illegal searches.
So what can come of your 2-part investigative report? Because what we've got here is a pattern that you surmise from the repeated complaints of suspects that, by definition, they are not pursuing in court to try to prove and almost cannot prove in terms of the illegal nature of the searches that are producing a lot of marijuana arrests. So what can come of this?
Well, if these stories are true, and again, we're relying on stories of people, anecdotal evidence, I hope that, you know, a story like this could serve as notice to the NYPD that people are paying attention and that it would be embarrassing to continue this kind of practice if these stories are true. But I do want to just sort of summarize some of the comments we've been getting about the stories. People who have been supportive of the police, they say, look, these police officers who are in these high crime neighborhoods, they're chasing crime and they're trying to reduce violent crime. They are, yes, stopping young men, but they're doing that to disrupt potentially criminal activity. They're trying to get guns off the street. They're trying to at least show their presence in particular neighborhoods that have high crime rates to show that they are aggressive. And that show of force may deter violent crime in the future. Now, there's a whole academic debate as to whether that rationale is valid, that there's no way to choose to say that low-level arrests or any low-level offense arrests are actually the cause of any drop in violent crime. That's an academic debate. But that debate is out there, and it's important.
Mel in Bedford-Stuyvesant, something like this happened to you?
Yeah. Brian, let me just say this, and I want to say good morning to your guests. I don't fit the description. I don't look like, you know, one of the boys in the hood. I'm in my 60s. I've been stopped twice.
Recently?
Okay? And as previous callers said, and as your guest said, you don't challenge these guys because they want you to challenge them so that they can move it to the next level, whereby, you know, maybe hitting you upside your head or charging you with something else, okay? And, again...
Well, I don't know if they want that. I mean, they want you to be compliant, don't they?
Be black, and you know they want that. They the way they come up on you with this attitude, like if you say something, I want you to say something, and I'll go off on you. And this whole thing about marijuana... I think it was Jimmy Breslin or one of them who is not a left-wing radical. He has written about this, that whites can stand out and smoke marijuana. They might come, police might come over and tell them to put it out or whatever.
Yeah.
But he says, he's mentioned, and I agree with him, that, you know, blacks and Latinos get carried away in handcuffs.
Right. And that, thank you, Mel. And that's one of the underlying stats here, too, that we talked about yesterday, Elsa, and we've got about 20 seconds left, but that, 80-85% of the marijuana arrests are of
black or Latino
people in New York City, and we know they're not smoking 80-85% of the pot.
No, national studies show actually young whites between 18 and 25 smoke pot more.
So it's about where the stops and frisks take place because of where they're looking for the weapons.
There's a lot of overlap, yes.
WNYC's Elsa Chang, investigative reporter. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Senator Evan Bayh next, former Democratic senator from Indiana. Among other things, we'll get his reaction to President Obama releasing the long form of his birth certificate last hour. Stay with us.